Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and let's get started with the introduction.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a book, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge for a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the air.
We are so live, and yeah, we're on the air. And that was written specially by Rachel and Michael from Trinity House Entertainment, Doc Inc., for me, for MJ Network. MJ standing for my sister, who I miss daily, Marcia Joyce, who got me started on this. And we are going to talk to Nancy Allen, who wrote Wolf in the Woods, in just one moment. But first, happy birthday to my nephew Josh, who turns 21 today, my honor student. And congratulations to my niece Katie Rose for getting inducted into Spanish Society in North Broward Preparatory Academy. Now, many girls want to become models or have their faces on the cover of magazines. They search online for many different venues to find out where they can learn more about interviews, companies looking for certain images, and they fall prey to predators, pedophiles, and fake offers of fame and fortune. We're going to talk about that as we talk about Wolf in the Woods with Nancy Allen. Hi, good morning. How are you? That's just the first paragraph of my review that I'm going to post later.
Loved hearing it, and good morning to you, Fran, out of the sun shining in southwest Missouri. I hear it may not be in New York City.
No, it's horrible. As a matter of fact, according to my phone, it's going to stop raining next week, according to this phone. And you can see the raindrops falling on my phone. It's going to stop raining next Wednesday, to be exact. That's what it says. Anyway. This is a very important book because lately everybody's been writing about human sex trafficking and stuff like that. So when creating this book, why did you focus on this particular topic? Because it's very important.
Fran, authenticity is important to me when I write these novels. And all of my books are focused on actual challenges that face my community in southwest Missouri. So I had read an article because sex trafficking is timely and it's been in the press, but a lot of people think it doesn't exist in the heartland. So I read in the newspaper that in the Western District of Missouri, the U.S. Attorney's Office filed more sex trafficking charges in the Western District of Missouri than any other place in the United States. And I thought, my God, it's here. So that was the ignition for the spark, and I thought Elsie's next law enforcement challenge, next criminal challenge, will be a sex trafficking enterprise. And even though, you know, I was a prosecutor in my day, I never handled sex trafficking cases because that wasn't even a thing when I was in the prosecutor's office. So I did research. I researched FBI materials. I talked with other people in law enforcement and uncovered what is really a dark underbelly, and it's not just on the coast, and it's not just in urban areas. It is here in the small town Midwest as well.
Yeah, I know. As a matter of fact, I think the most horrific thing that happened to me while I was teaching and I was the dean that year was that we found out we had a pedophile in my school. And, yeah, it was horrible. And, it's funny because I reported something to the principal who did nothing about it for quite some time, and he spent 10 years in Rikers. And, yeah, you would never know. I mean, you had a feeling, but it's horrible. So tell
it
us
is.
About...
And I will say, you know, the sex crimes involving children are another curse in my area. In the Ozarks, my home county has the highest rate of sex crimes involving children of any place in Missouri. That was true when I was in the prosecutor's office many years ago. It is still true today, which we always attribute, maybe it has to do with the hillbilly history here of isolation and misogyny. But it's true that it's everywhere. We just have more of it, it seems.
That I know, it's horrible. And on top of which, three of the boys in my school wound up HIV positive because of him. So I mean, I knew that there was something odd about him, but unfortunately he was a good teacher. That was scary, and I trained him to be good. And I was like, oh my God, you know, you knew there was something wrong, but nobody did anything about it until it was too late, even though we reported it. But tell us about, I was hanging out with Elsie for a while. Tell us about her backstory and how you created her. She was a good character, interesting character.
Oh, thank you so much. Elsie Arnold is my main character. She's the protagonist in my series, the Ozarks Mystery Series. And Elsie is an assistant prosecuting attorney in a fictional county in southwest Missouri in the Ozark Hills. What HarperCollins liked about Elsie, what I like about her too, Elsie is not a perfect protagonist. She is very flawed. She has feet of clay, and I did that intentionally. You know, Fran, so often when we do get to see females as main characters in mystery and suspense and thriller fiction, they always seem to me so perfectly perfect in every way, the brilliant medical examiner or FBI agent, and they don't make mistakes and they don't have bad habits. So I thought, I believe I'll give my Elsie a different profile. So Elsie is very flawed. She cusses like a sailor, and she drinks like a frat boy, and has been known to have very bad taste in men, but she is passionately dedicated to her job and seeing justice done in the community in which she lives, in the Ozarks. So that's my girl, Elsie.
That takes place there.
Yeah.
She's a brave person. That's what I will say about that. She's sort of,
and
you know,
she's been known to be rash and reckless, but passionate, dedicated, wants to see the right thing done.
Not many people do, though. So the other character that I like, but I think he needs to be a little bit more understanding, is Ashlock. Why did he always seem like he was strained? Yeah, poor Ashlock.
You know, Ashlock is the chief of the detective division in the local police department in Elsie's community. And they struck up a romance in the first book, and they have continued to try to maintain that. But as you have observed, their relationship faces challenges. I told you, Elsie's kind of a wild child. Ashlock is very much a straight arrow. And being a straight arrow, also, he has three children from prior marriage, and he has custody of a teenage boy. So Ashlock is trying to live a very measured life, raising his son, being the head of law enforcement in the community, and to walk the straight and narrow path. And Elsie is not the least interested in the straight and narrow path. She's more interested in what they call the primrose path around here. So that causes them to butt heads on a regular basis. So even though they care about each other, they're attracted to each other, certainly, this is not appearing to be an ideal romance.
Well, Cheryl is here. I just texted her, and she's here. Good morning, Cheryl. We're having a good time on this one. I'm glad you're here. She's listening. They listen to everything I do. Besides the
Cheryl,
fair people
nice
blog
by
radio.
Telephone.
Yeah, she's great. They are great. And get ready, because Franz is going to be finishing, hopefully, my next book soon, as soon as I have 5 minutes from book reviews to write it. Yeah, it's going to be different. So she was an assistant prosecuting attorney, and he's FBI. And how do those roles clash? Because they're both dedicated to their positions. So that makes it kind of hard.
They're both dedicated law enforcement. Now, he works with the FBI, but he is local law enforcement. So he is PD, police department. And, you know, I think their roles, even though their goal is the same, Fran, their roles are different. Cops investigate crime. They're the first feet on the scene. They get the witness statements. They put together the forensic evidence, and then they hand it over to the prosecutor's office. The prosecution takes the case, files the charge if it's sufficient, and then they're the ones who are to present it to the court or the jury for conviction of the crime. And sometimes it's not always that simple, and they don't see a case from the same viewpoint because their roles are different. So the prosecution, their perspective is, can the case be proved beyond a reasonable doubt? And which is why, and I also get into this, how sometimes the prosecutor can get involved on her own in the investigative end because she might see other possibilities than the police saw, or she might see holes that need to be filled in a winnable case. So their goal is both to have law and order in the community. But their roles and the steps they take to see that done are different and can lead to conflict. And I have seen that happen when I was a prosecutor, and I still see it happen just from observation in my community today. The police, the FBI, the prosecution, they don't always see eye to eye.
I know that from dealing with different law enforcement, but I've interviewed so many people with law enforcement. You get different takes on everything in real life. That's what makes it so much fun, let me tell you.
It's true.
Now I know who to ask questions of if I ever decide to write anything about the law in one of my next books.
There you go.
I should be able to write a murder mystery by now, but I don't know.
I should think so.
So we have Matt. I've read a couple of thousand, and there's a couple of about 500 inside. I don't even know.
Yeah,
a bunch on my chair. I'm doing almost done with the one for August 1st. I'm going to work on August 6th, and in between there, Carla Negus just sent me her new romance book, A River House. So I promised her I would read it in between everything else. So, who is Madeline and who is Bree?
Now, Madeline is the woman I love to hate. In Missouri,
okay.
Every county has an elected official who is the prosecuting attorney. It is the person who is the political figure who's in charge of the prosecutor's office. Every county has one. So Madeline Thompson is the prosecuting attorney, the political figure in Elsie's county, and Elsie is assistant prosecutor who works for her. Madeline is Elsie's nemesis and also works in my storytelling as a foil, because you know what Elsie's like. Madeline is pretty much her complete opposite. And Madeline, that causes them to have a great deal of conflict because there's a lot of things about Elsie that Madeline doesn't like, but you know, sometimes Elsie doesn't like Madeline very much either. So Madeline is a woman who is married to one of the wealthiest people in town. Her husband is the John Deere distributor. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if y'all know much about that in New York, but in rural counties, the guy who's selling the John Deere tractors is one of the richest guys in town. And Madeline's husband has three such distributorships. So Madeline is rich. She's the prosecutor. She is the kind of woman who never eats much but salad, and is a well-behaved matron. But Elsie is the one who is the tiger in court. So Elsie works for Madeline. They bump heads. Now, another one of Elsie's co-workers is Breon, and Breon is Elsie's BFF. She is Elsie's best friend. They don't have identical lives, even though they're both very, very dedicated assistant prosecutors. But Breon is a single mother from St. Louis. She is a woman of color, which makes her unusual in a Southwest Missouri community. And she has a daughter named Taylor, who is 15. So Breon is not running the bars with Elsie, but they are very close. They are dedicated friends, and as well as being co-workers. So Breon and Elsie click, absolutely. Elsie and Madeline, not at all.
Well, that happens. But maybe Madeline will learn and realize that she's lucky to have Elsie. Because
there
now that
go.
I've met
well,
her, you know, I'm on her side. Don't mess with her. You're going to have a problem with me. This is right.
That's right.
So what case was being tried? And this is an important question because everybody, young girls, need to understand this. Who are Taylor and Desiree? And the problem is that young girls fall prey to what's going to happen next. That's what's scary.
a couple of things are happening in the beginning of the book. Elsie and Breon together are handling first a felony assault charge, and then later they are assigned to handle a misdemeanor jury trial for assault. Now, I'll tell you, no prosecutor wants to mess with a jury trial that is a misdemeanor because they're small potatoes and it is too much an investment of your time and effort. But fireworks happened while they are in the course of selecting the jury in that case. And some of the fireworks involve Taylor and Desiree. Okay, Taylor first. Taylor is the daughter, the middle school daughter, of Breon, the assistant prosecutor, who is Elsie's good friend. And so Taylor is, she's an exceptional student. She is a star athlete. But it is difficult for Taylor living in this community because she is one of very few black students in the entire middle school. So she's got everything going for her intellectually. She has a mother that is very, very concerned and interested in her and devoted to her. But sometimes it's not easy to be Taylor in Barton, Missouri, in the Ozarks.
Mm-hmm.
Desiree. Desiree is a classmate of hers, also another middle schooler. These girls are just on the verge of 15. And Desiree also comes from a home that is a single mother. But Desiree's background was, as a child, she was up to her eyeballs in the kiddie pageant circuit. Now, I don't know how much this goes on in your neck of the woods, Fran, but around here there are people who are addicted to this whole toddlers and tiaras scenario. And then the children get older and the pageants continue just at an older age. But it was very important to Desiree's mother, who was a clerk at the grocery store, that her daughter get fame and fortune in the kiddie pageant. And then Desiree kind of grew out of it because as she grew older, the pageants were giving her the trophies and they didn't have the money to afford. Oh, my Lord, these pageants can cost a fortune. So they didn't have the money to keep up with it, and she was no longer bringing home the prizes. And so that ended for them as their enterprise for bringing fame and fortune to Desiree.
I had a student when I went to school a long time ago, not yesterday, just yesterday, in elementary school, whose mother took her out to be in these pageants. She thought it was more important for her to be a star, and I don't think she ever became a star. You don't know what happens. And there was another one that whose mother felt that he was a genius, and she wanted him to do something else. It's really big up here. It's scary because a lot of these children don't realize that their mothers or fathers sometimes are using it to exploit them for money. And that's
Or their own personal ambition. Don't you see
and
over, Fran? That the mother wants to create an identity by having the child achieve something that perhaps the mother wishes she could have had, or the father, or it builds up their sense of self. And I think that that is invariably the case because what kid really wants to spend every weekend on a pageant circuit and be judged on whether the child is more or less beautiful than other people? It's a sickness, really. And I explore that a little bit in the book as well.
I agree. My niece, a long time ago, I got a phone call from my sister, and she asked me to speak to somebody quite famous at a modeling agency. And I'm saying, why am I spending all this thousands of dollars giving it to them when I don't believe this whole thing? I think it's just a scam just to get the money just because they think she's wonderful. She went on a shoot, actually to Hawaii or wherever, and they told her she was not the right type. And that was, I said to her, at this point, you need to go back to school and forget all of this. So she's going to be a paramedic instead.
We there you go. Now that
is a
skill only serves her better, but helps other people.
Not only that, it was her mother that, you know, said, oh, she's going to be famous. I said, I don't think so. And thank goodness she heard her in, because if they want anybody in my family to know, listen to me, don't listen to anybody else, because I'm going to tell you the right way to go. It's scary, yeah. Like I said, so what would, they were researching something, and whose idea was it to go into modeling? You know, they're kids. They don't look into who's doing it. They don't know. They don't see what's behind the scenes. We'll look down deep. So what were they going to do?
So they have been researching on the Internet these modeling websites that are reaching out to teen models, which, as you just pointed out, the best thing that happens with those is they're trying to get money out of the parents' pockets, but there can be a darker side to them as well. So they are both researching this. Desiree is the one who got the search started, and we can deduce from the story that Desiree's mother is all about this. She is absolutely excited that her daughter, who did not make it as a kiddie pageant star of reality television, has a second chance. She's going to be a model. So they have been going online, and they're looking at these ads that pitch modeling careers to essentially to teenagers, children from 12 to, I think they said 12 to 25 in the story. I wrote it. Yeah, that's what it said, was 12 to 25. And I researched this as well. These ads are everywhere. And I do think that some of them may just want money. But some of these ads, as we know, want something darker. So Desiree wants this because Desiree because she made her mother happy and made her own identity and sense of self when she was in the beauty pageants, and she was getting rhinestone tiaras for that. Now she's in middle school, and we all know middle school is a torturous, horrible time for adolescents. And for girls, it's hard to see yourself as a person of significant worth, and too much in our society, the way an adolescent can believe that she has worth is if she is beautiful, if she is attractive, if she's someone that a person would like a picture of. And so the ultimate in that would be to have a modeling career. So Desiree wants this because Desiree's odd girl out at the middle school anyway. They got no money. She is from a single-parent home, and she's not particularly good at anything. She couldn't make the cheerleading squad. She's not an outstanding student. She doesn't have any athletic bent. So Desiree needs an identity. Desiree talks Taylor into this because Taylor's a sympathetic kid. She has found Desiree crying in the bathroom and has reached out to her because she's nice. But then Desiree talked her into, oh my gosh, what a glamorous thing we could do. And I also, in my research, it revealed that, a lot of kids who get into this trouble with predators, sure, some of them are runaways. Some of them have been in disastrous family situations. Some of them come from extreme, extreme poverty. But others can get trapped into it, even though it is not the type of young girl that you would even think would be vulnerable to it, because the predators are everywhere. And so I think I tried to illustrate that and show how that can happen to girls who are actually normal girls, from one of them a very stable home and the other one pretty stable home. So
I know. It's scary because I just finished a couple of books. And like I said, this topic is really huge. And where these young girls' parents actually sell them into sex slavery for money. And they said, we're going to send them, you know, to America. They're going to have all this whatever. And basically, they're selling them into slavery. They don't care. I know I'm writing a book about my two grandmothers. And my cousin told me on Wednesday that my grandmother, my father's mother, who I didn't know a lot about, was sent to America and sold to her cousins to work there as a maid. And who knows what else.
And indentured servitude.
Yeah, exactly. And she said that, no wonder she never smiled. And then she wound up living with somebody else, and she had a horrible life. So I'm writing her story and my other grandmother's story because I think people need to be aware of this even today. So,
and people don't understand.
They don't understand that.
In the 21st century, and here again, the international angle, and we have seen this in Southwest Missouri, that internationals are being sent, and once they come here, they are being put into slavery conditions.
Mm-hmm.
They don't
yeah.
speak the language, and they don't understand that this is legally impermissible in our country. But the people mm-hmm. who have the power, the ownership, if you will, over them, say, you owe me a debt. I paid for you to come. I am providing
mm-hmm.
you room and board, and therefore, until you pay off the debt through, and sometimes it is domestic work, as you said. Sometimes it is massage parlors we see, and when it's massage
mm-hmm.
parlors, you know, that is often going to involve prostitution, and we've seen that in my neck of the woods. But the internationals don't understand that, in fact, nobody gets to make you a slave, and no one can require you to work off the debt in that fashion. They don't speak the language, and they don't know. But we also have this happening to people who are American citizens who are born in this country because they are so young and vulnerable that they can
mm-hmm.
get caught up in it and end up essentially being in a slavery situation, even though they have come from the middle of the country in the heartland, which we like to call the Bible Belt. The danger is everywhere.
It's true. My grandmother spoke Russian. She didn't speak English at all. And this man came to the house and said, you're going to have blessing, you're going to have mazel if you send her to America. And she said, I'm the younger sister, send my older sister. And my grandma Bertha got stuck coming here. So
oh, mercy.
It's true. It's, yeah, she didn't want, and then she didn't want to ever go back there. She said it was horrible there, too. And I guess she was lucky because her sister never made it out when the war began. So in some respects she was lucky, in some respects she wasn't. So when Elsie tells Ashlock something about sex trafficking in Barton, why doesn't he believe her? Why doesn't he do anything about it? He just sort of denies that it's happening.
He does indeed. And I told you that authenticity
mm-hmm.
is important to me.
Yeah.
In the past 12 months, in the city in which I live, which they call the Queen City of the Ozarks, there was an allegation that we had sex trafficking in Springfield, Missouri, and the chief of police called a press conference, and he said to our local press and our local television, he said, there is no sex trafficking in Springfield, Missouri, because if there was, I would know it. I think it was between 4 and 5 weeks later that the attorney general of the state came with the highway patrol and busted a big sex trafficking ring in Springfield, Missouri. The idea of sex trafficking as a crime in the heartland is still so novel. I don't think local law enforcement has their head around.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that a lot of people don't believe that it can happen here, but it's here. It is. And in addition, I think that a part of the prosecution of sex trafficking is they also don't have their mindset, and this is something that's going to have to
mm-hmm.
change. And I explored this in the book, too,
mm-hmm.
that and I have read about different sex trafficking prosecutions in Missouri where law enforcement was reluctant to proceed because they still view the sex worker who is in the involuntary sex trafficking, the slavery, if you will, they view them as a criminal. They don't want to put them on the witness stand. They don't want to have to dirty their hands by dealing with someone who is a professional prostitute. And so if you are looking at the victim as a criminal and stepping back because of that, law enforcement is simply going to help this continue to grow worse. But it happens.
Tell me about it. As an educator, I reported it, too. Ashlock
yeah.
didn't want to know. Yeah. That's scary.
And Ashlock, I think I gave him the exact quote that we had heard from the chief of police. And I believe I had Ashlock say, there's no sex trafficking in Barton, Missouri, because if there was, I would know it. And I have seen in my own community that is simply not the case.
He was blindsiding himself, and that's bad.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I know, and that's scary. As an educator, I reported sex abuse a couple of times, and it's scary because a student will come up to you and say, this is what happened, and even whether I believe them or not, and I was never wrong, and they were not lying, whether they were right or wrong, I have to report it. And it was the hardest thing one day when a young kid came up to me and she said, my aunt is doing this to me. And she just said it straight out. She said, you're the only person I trust. I was in tears. I said, you've got to be kidding me. And I made a phone call to the, you know, guidance counselor. And I said, this is what I was just told. When the mother came in to find out that her sister was doing this, I thought she was going to kill me. And then she apologized because I was right. It was,
you know,
it's frightening. And, you know, they didn't want to do anything about it. You know, it was horrible. So tell us about Marge Arnold and why she was so respected and about her accident. Nobody was safe in this.
Marge Arnold is Elsie's mother. And Marge Arnold is an English teacher at the middle school in Barton. And she has both of those kids as students. Marge, you know, I set my books in my own community where I was born and raised, and my people have been here for generations. And I don't glam it up, and I don't fake it. There are villains in this area. There are crimes that are a sickness in this area, and I make that very clear. But I also maintain that we have heroes in this area. There are salt-of-the-earth people who are trying real hard to bring the Ozarks into the 21st century and to make it the good community. And so I do use Marge as an illustration of that, because Marge is that hardworking professional school teacher in a stable marriage who has done her best to raise the perfect daughter, even though Elsie is not the perfect daughter. And so I have Marge as the agent school teacher, and Marge does Marge stumbles onto something that is showing that Elsie's suspicions are correct. And once she sees it, and she sees students with pornographic materials, and once she does that, Marge is not hesitant to act, and she takes one of the students to the local police department, and they have to report what has been seen at school. And it's very distressing to Marge, as of course it would be. And because she is distracted, it happens that Marge ends up in an automobile collision because she is distracted and not thinking about driving the car. She's thinking about what's going on. And the fact that she is in a car accident leads to Elsie's continued peril. But no more spoilers, I guess. No spoilers. But anyway, so that's what's up with Marge. But like I said, I do, you know, a lot of times when people are writing about we're kind of Southern Gothic here in Springfield, Missouri, and when people want to depict the Ozarks, they're very happy to depict the villains, and baby, we've got a lot of them. But then they want to bring in, and in fact, it has been suggested to me before that I should bring in the outsider as the hero who wants to make the Ozarks a better place, or the person who is wanting to right the wrongs of the Ozarks. No. Even though we got the bad guys here, we have poisonous situations and associations in our community, and I'm the first to admit it. We also have our heroes. And so my bad guys are local, my good guys are local, and that is something I continue to maintain in my writing.
Well, for those of you, this is I don't have the original copy. They printed one out for me, by the way. That's my rule. A friend doesn't read anything but print. But I'm looking at the cover, and I could see. I see things they tell me that no one else does. Ha, ha, ha. And I'm looking at the picture, and above the mountains, it looks like there's a face. And it looks like there are two eyes and a face looking out. And it sort of fits the title, A Wolf in the Woods, which I'll read the last sentence of my book review at the end, but it looks like somebody is staring out. I don't know. Did you see this cover?
I know exactly what you mean. It almost a wolf-like figure, but as we know, the wolf is not a problem with animals. The problem is human, but you're right. It does indeed.
Yeah, it is. It's dark indeed. So I like this cover because the trees are very sad. And the face that's staring at me, you can't tell who it is or what it is or anything. So that's even
and
better.
There's a building in the distance that could be the destination for something real bad.
Right. Well, something real bad does happen. Well, we're not going to tell anybody what it was. But there's a character that everybody knows about because this is the person that lured them in, and that would be Tony and Dee Dee.
Yes.
So, yeah, and this is where we find out that these two girls made a mistake. So how did you create him? He's good. I mean, he's not a great character, but he does his job very well. He makes his point. I wanted to smack him in the head a few times.
I do appreciate that. I had, you know, I do my homework, but also I had a lot of involvement with criminal prosecution of people in sex cases, and while I never did a sex trafficking case, it was not that much of a stretch for me to make a composite character who was an abusive person who was taking advantage of women and using them, utilizing them, women and girls, for a criminal enterprise. So Tony, and you know, it's kind of like in Paradise Lost where maybe, you know, it's more interesting to write about Satan character. It was interesting to write my Tony chapters and to try and think what is inside his wicked head and how do I convey that. It was a challenge, but a really, really interesting one. And so Tony is our villain. He is our bad guy. He's the wolf in the woods. I think it's probably pretty clear, and he was an interesting character to write. But yeah, I was able to base him on local people who have abused or taken advantage mm-hmm. of women in the area, cases I've handled and cases I've read about.
I can almost draw a picture of him after the way you described him, and that doesn't happen too often. That when I read a book and I review, I can close my eyes and actually see him. That's what's scarier.
Oh, I
and
like
the way you depicted him. You see, and usually that doesn't happen. It's like I read this book and I'm going, oh, he's the killer. Well, what does he look like? Where did he come from? What's his background? Why is he doing this? And I'm going, I don't know. I make it up in my head. So Elsie decides to do something, which is kind of dangerous. Why does she do what she do? And I was like, are you joking? Are you kidding me? And then
in this story,
Taylor has to come
Fran,
clean.
Elsie,
how did you do that?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Elsie is kind of like the mythical figure Cassandra. Cassandra always
mm-hmm.
had that sharp eye and knew what was going to happen in the future, and she'd try to tell everybody, and no one would ever believe her. So
mm-hmm.
Elsie has tried to be Cassandra and tell what's going on, and everybody shuts her down and doesn't believe it. Well, Elsie, it is consistent with Elsie's character that she would take a risk and do something rash because she is going to prove a point and because she is passionate about the protection of girls and women in the community. So Elsie does take a real risk. I don't know that Elsie thought she was risking it all, but, you know, sometimes you got to put the thrill in thrillers. So I do think that people will be very interested in what happens to Elsie and how we see that through in the story.
I know, because I was getting nervous. I was getting worried.
Oh,
that was
just what I hoped. I'm so glad to hear that.
Well, I told you, I learned a long time ago from a college professor how to figure out what a book is about and then figure out what it really is about. And I'm saying Nancy Allen is not going to kill off her main character, not like some other people have done to me. And I've even written it in a couple of reviews. How could you kill off the main character? How do you kill this person? You just ruined my whole day. You know, what can I say?
I love Elsie too much. We were talking about George Martin, how he killed off the head of the Starks in, of course, the end of the season one of Game of Thrones on HBO. And I thought, what'd you do that to us? No, and I have read before, oh, you must be willing to kill off your hero. Elsie's going nowhere. That's a guarantee. I love her too much.
Well, I heard something. I say I read a lot of stuff and I research a lot, and it said something that at the end of next season he's going to kill off everybody. I mean, that no one's going to like that, because then he doesn't have a
well. That'll
to come
make
back
everybody
again, but then
unhappy.
Again, I don't know. I don't watch Game of Thrones. I watch some of them because my husband does, and I don't want to watch that. It's too violent. No, I watch other things like Criminal Minds. That's how I learn how to understand these murder mysteries very well.
Mm-hmm.
He's got me hooked on it. So Taylor admits that she's working, dealing with Tony, but why? You know, kids are afraid, and they're afraid of retribution, and they're afraid that someone's going to hurt them. Why did she take such a long time to say anything?
This is something else that I learned in the research and the FBI materials, mm-hmm. that they are controlling in sex trafficking. There are different ways to control the victims of sex trafficking. And like we said, if they came mm-hmm. over on an airplane from a faraway country and can't speak English, they're easy to control. Mm-hmm. But what about a girl who's a smart girl, who's in a nice family, has a parent who cares, can read and write? How do you control such a person? And there are other methods. Some of them they will control with drugs, but Taylor's not the kind of girl who can be controlled with drugs. So mm-hmm. We do have another character in the book who is mm-hmm. who will do just about anything for the drugs, but not Taylor. So he has to use mm-hmm. another method to control Taylor, and he comes up with a dandy one, as you know. And in fact, mm-hmm. even though Taylor is a bright, outstanding young woman, and the reader becomes curious about why hasn't Taylor come forth and put an end and put a stop to all this when there is so much at stake and when there's danger, and you know that Taylor does not. But the reason is that people – in sex trafficking can also they can also use blackmail, and if they have sufficient wherewithal to get the materials to blackmail a person with, particularly a young girl, would be intimidated by that. And so Tony figures out how to control Taylor, and it is a very effective measure of control for mm-hmm. quite some time.
Well, we're not going to say anything about that. Before I forget, you can't get rid of me, people. I'm going to be on the air Monday with the author of Look for Her. And then on the 24th, Lying, Cheating, and Murder. Nothing like that. And a really scary book that scared the daylights out of me. Preordained on the 29th. And Burn One Down on the 31st. On the 4th, one of these days you're going to have to do one of these with me. I'm doing a panel show with some of your favorite people. Alan Topol, Charles Salzberg, John Lansing, Bruce Coffin, and possibly Rick Beltsy. We're going to talk about endings where the villain might be coming back to kill again. That's what I love. A book that just says, I'm not done yet. I'm coming back, and I'm going to beat this rep, and I'm going to be back for a while. On the 6th, we have Dangerous Places. On the 7th, Speed the Dawn. And on the 13th, I am so excited. The former director of the CDC, Michael Shusko, I'm doing this show at 8 o'clock in the morning, Evil Wins, and this is an important show to learn about what's happening to the refugees in Darfur. And then I can't say who it is, but there's a very strong possibility that one of the authors, quite famous, has a movie that just came out, and I might be doing the exclusive interview on June 27th. That's all I'll say about that until I know more. I'm excited, let me tell you. So, Madeline was very difficult to deal with. So why was she didn't appreciate Elise at all. So when Elise, you know, what happens, what does Madeline do about it? Anything?
Okay, and Madeline, you got to understand, Madeline is a political animal. She has this political mm-hmm. office not because of any great talent as a trial attorney, and we see this. We see this all the time. The person who holds political office is not necessarily the most talented or brilliant person, but it's the person with the right contacts, the person who has mm-hmm. the money to play the political game. So, I mean, Madeline does the right things as far as being approved of in the eye of the community, but she is not a great trial attorney. Now, Elsie is a great trial attorney, But Elsie doesn't play by the rules, and that drives Madeline crazy. Also, you live in a big city. I live in the country. I have lived all my life in these small towns. A small town is a goldfish bowl, and in the goldfish bowl, it is important to many in the community that you behave yourself in a certain way. Elsie flies in the face of all those rules. So despite the fact that Elsie is the most courageous and the best trial attorney in the office and has many, many gifts, Madeline doesn't like her because she won't behave herself. In addition, have you ever had a boss or a superior in the office who might have resented you because perhaps you were more talented at what you did? I think that's also part of what's going on with Madeline's lack of appreciation for Elsie.
I think she's slightly jealous and wishes she was Elsie.
I think she is.
Well, Elsie's a lot like me because if I want to know something, I'm just going to know it. And if I want to know the answer to something, I'm going to research it. And then if I have to bother 10 people to find out what I need to know, I'm going to do it. And, it's just my personality. If I don't know something and I'm unsure, if I have to ask a question about anything, could be medical, it could be so anything, I'm going to want to know. And last week I had to call the school board of Florida to find out something for my nephew that I needed to know. And, yeah, I found out because that's just me. So I'm going to question out the question I just asked, the one before this, because I don't think we need to tell everybody about something that happens to somebody. So Tony wants money from profit.
Yeah,
we don't want to say what's going to happen. I just realized that. So Tony wants money profit from these girls, and this happens today. But what bothers me is that, and I'm going to add this, is that they have these girls, and why do they drug them and abuse them if they're using them for sex trafficking and to lure these guys who have nothing better to do with their time, but to, you know, use them for whatever? Why do they abuse them, and why do they allow some of these people to abuse them for money too? That bothers me.
Because the girls are chattel. The girls are chattel.
Yeah, I know.
They have no rights at all. Also, they have to keep them malleable, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have to keep them cooperative. I mean, who'd want to do what teenage girl wants to do, what they are requiring them to do? So
mm-hmm.
he's got to keep them either through physical abuse, through drug use, or through a coercion, blackmail. Or sometimes I also show that sometimes what Tony will do is he will do it by trying to nurture affection. Sometimes he'll act
mm-hmm.
like he loves them, right? This all was also in my research, but there are different methods that pimps use to keep the women who are the prostitutes under their thumb, and Tony uses them all because he's got different personalities that work for him. Another thing that I wanted to say is, so Tony wants to have a criminal enterprise, and Tony wants to make money. The other thing is, and here's another country saying, you can only eat a cow once, but you can milk it over and over and over again. This
mm-hmm.
is why he is drawn to sex trafficking. He could get in the drug trade, but you get drugs, you sell them, they're gone. You have a teenage girl, you can sell her over and over and over again. And so that is what is attractive about sex trafficking to Tony, is because they are a continuing source of income. But he has to keep them in control in order to achieve that income. And so he uses, as we pointed out, he uses physical abuse. He uses mental abuse. He uses drugs. And he uses blackmail to do so. But the way you get them in, you got to hook them somehow. What does every girl want? And with a couple of the girls, we see what they want is affection. But with others,
mm-hmm.
you appeal to that dream of the modeling enterprise, and you can get a
mm-hmm.
whole different class of girl.
Well, if you look at these sites, because you know me, when I do read a book, I research everything. I'm terrible. And you could see, you know, pictures that they have of, oh, you're going to be a success. And they have all these phony pictures that
yes.
on their
yes.
site. And they actually believe this junk. I mean, really. And they're so vulnerable. And this what bothers me is that I think that schools need to have more of a say in sex education programs, and the police need to come in and have actually talk to these children, because, you know, I have one niece that I keep track of what her kids are doing. Seriously, I do. And the other one that knows exactly what her children are doing every minute of the day. And there was, you know, safeguards in school. I know that because I have the passwords to one of them, and I found out what she's doing in school. There's something called Pinnacle, and that parents have access to it. I'm not sure up here, but in Florida, where you can log on every day and find out if your child's in class, absent, homework assignments, homework that's missing, everything. And parents need to know. So what warning signs do parents need to be aware of that their son, or even boys too, son or daughter, is becoming victim to something that they don't know about? And what would be some of the things that they would change besides cutting class every single day?
Cutting class, if they are absent and no explanation, or not able or not willing to tell the parents what the associations are, where they're going and what they're doing, that's a warning sign. That's something people need to be aware of. If the student has had a change either in personality or in interests or in what their achievements are. You had a good student or even an okay student, and all of a sudden they're failing. There's something going on. But associations are key. And what are they doing on the internet? What are they looking at? And I do know some parents pride themselves on giving their teenage child a great deal of privacy. And I think they're doing them a disservice. I really do, because it is so much more important that our teenage children be protected than that they be accorded great privacy as an individual in their vulnerable years. And I think people need to be aware of that. In addition, I show two kinds of parental responses in this. And one is the mother who did not believe it could be possible because her daughter was so outstanding. And the other one was the mother who blinded herself to the frightening things that were going on because she so wanted the child to have this success at modeling that she deluded herself. Both of those responses were very dangerous responses for the children involved.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I mean, I know that one of my nieces, you know, doesn't have the safeguards that the other one does. But there is I just put it on my phone. It's called Find My Phone or Find a Friend Phone. And if you put that on your phone, or you put it on your child's phone, or you put it on your phone and you put the child's phone on there, you can find them wherever they are.
It's true.
That's something that, it's an app that people need to be aware of. Also, there are controls on the internet where you can, you know, parent controls where they can't look at these sites. Of course, that's not to say that when they go to a friend's house that they're not going to look at it too. So we've got about 7 minutes. How can this be stopped? And parents and teens, the law has to do more. And why do parents and teens have to be careful before you pay these modeling agencies? I mean, you get phone calls and you're just going on the internet, and then where are you located? Well, I'm located in a back alley somewhere. So how do they protect themselves from paying thousands of dollars for something that's not going to happen? What should they know?
I want to talk about one thing about answer your first question. How can it be stopped? You know, just recently, this has been the past few weeks, the federal government is taking action against a website called Backpage. Backpage has been one of the major contributors to sex trafficking. They do ads that people use who want to buy sex and who want to buy sex. It's been used to buy sex for minors. So Backpage has been targeted by the feds, but for way too long. There is a federal statute. It's called the Communications Decency Act. And under the Communications Decency Act, Congress has given the IP protection. The IP is not liable for content that is on their web page. This has given too much protection for IPs that want to let people who post engage in criminal activity. And I believe that Congress is one of the places this could start. They got to change the Communications Decency Act and take away that protection from the IP. In addition, we were saying, what are parents, what are they going to have to be aware of? You and I both know there are many, many young modeling agencies, teen modeling agencies that are legitimate. They're not all predators, but they need to be aware that some of them are predators. You point out also, Fran, some of them just want to line their pockets with the money of a parent who has a dream for a child, because I still think we both agree this is often the parent's dream and not the child's dream.
Yep.
And you got to wonder, who wants to push their kid to pursue modeling at a tender age anyway? How healthy a goal would that be? Why would they want their child's self-worth to be based on their physical appearance at a certain age, at the cost of developing other strengths, other talents, and other abilities? So here again, maybe this is not the best answer, but I'd think, how about having a different goal? That would be answer number one. Let's work on having them be enthusiastically pursuing something other than having somebody take their picture.
I agree with you. My sister went to a modeling agency, a very reputable one, and I said to her, "You're going to be unhappy because basically," and she could be a model. She could have been a singer. She was great, very talented. And I said to her, "Thank God you decided to work for ABC Television and didn't pursue this," which was a whole lot better. So before we end, what's next for our Elsie? What's next for you? And where can we find out more about you and your work? And are you coming to the PhilaFest this year?
Oh, I intend to. And I'll also be at BoucherCon in St. Petersburg. So it is, it's so much fun to come to these conferences and as much as anything to talk with other mystery authors, because, you know, this is a very solitary profession. But also we get to see our readers as well, and that is such a thrill. But as far as Elsie, you know and I know, Fran, because we know the book so well, I have left my readers on a cliffhanger. So
yes,
I
you did.
Sorting out. I did indeed. So I'm sorting out just where shall Elsie go next in her personal professional life. I'm working on it right now. This I promise. No, Elsie will never be killed off. That will never be a problem. And then as far as what's also next for me, I am also now a co-author with James Patterson. And
that was what I was going to ask next. I want that book.
Juror number 3 will be released in hardcover on September 10 of this year. So that's going to be real exciting.
Present.
And yeah, that'd be perfect. So
yeah,
well,
that would be my birthday
present
because my birthday's on the 9th. So how do I get the book? Because every time I send to Erin, she doesn't send it. And I want
to
do an interview about it.
Fran, I will get in touch with my editor this very day and say,
Fran Lewis wants to read.
And I know it's ready because it's been through all the edits and the copy edits and the production company has put their rubber stamp on it. So it's ready to read. I will let my editor know this very day, Fran. But,
Cheryl, she wants it also. Cheryl from Partners in Crime wants it too. Does James Patterson
I'm really
interviews?
Excited about that, too. Pardon?
Does he do interviews? Does James Patterson ever do interviews? Ever?
I would tell you that I would not be in a position to say what Mr. Patterson would do because he calls the shots. So I would say, but I tell you, Fran, I'll do an interview. And you know you know that I'd be glad to talk to you any old time. And I
am
very
intimately
acquainted.
Well, you're going to, as soon as I get this book and I read it, I'm going to contact, if you're going to do another blog tour with Partners in Crime, because they're the best, there's nobody better. And as a matter of fact, even if I don't ask for the book, they send it anyway, so I don't even have to worry about it. But yeah, definitely. I will contact you or even bug you at the Thriller Fest because we're going to talk about this on the air. I mean, just the fact that you're writing with James Patterson, everybody wants to know how do you co-author a book and what is it involved and blah, blah, blah. And that is going to be so good. So for those of you, it's raining outside. It's beautiful inside. This has been so much fun. Unfortunately, where I'm going next is not going to be so much fun, but I'm brave. Don't worry about it. I can handle it. And I want to thank you so very, very much. I can't wait to see you. Are you going to be on a panel at the Thriller Fest? What am I looking for?
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm hoping for a legal thriller panel. So, yes, I will.
Oh, good.
Can't wait to see you in July in New York City, Fran.
You will with my new color hair, blonde, purple, blue, green, yellow, and red, and pink. Streaks. No, I'm serious. Very serious.
Very cool.
No,
I'll still have the silver hair. But it'll be a pleasure. And Fran, this has been such fun to visit. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much. Everybody, have a great day. It's a beautiful day somewhere where she is in Missouri. It's raining here. Have a great day and bye.
Bye-bye.